OK. We shall now commence our Q&A. Followed by meditation reporting. So you can ask any question that are related to meditation. And also whatever that is related to the Dhamma. Those who want to report their meditation, they can. If you don't have any reporting, you can ask question. Then we will develop some sharing of the essential Dhamma. So we're supposed to come back here by 12:30. I think first day, not so easy for many people to adjust. Okay, in the meantime, anybody wants to report meditation? Anybody? Or ask any question? Where is the wireless mic? Okay. Anybody want to report meditation? You want to report? Or ask any question? It's okay. Don't worry. Pass to him. Yes. Just push it out.
I would like to know how you differentiate feeling and thought. Very hard to differentiate. Because I think it's thought, then I think it's feeling.
Okay. So, based on your question, how to differentiate between feeling and thought, then you use the word, I think it's feeling. Then I think it's thought. So what is actually happening? It's very simple, isn't it? Because you choose to be confused because you didn't investigate. After I explain, you will understand. Maybe I use the whiteboard. It will develop clearer understanding. It's a good question because many people are caught in this without realizing it. Can I rub this off? You don't need this anymore, isn't it? You need it or not? Who wrote this? He need it or not? Okay. So for the time being, we rub it off. Oh, never mind, I leave it first. Until I got no more space, then only I rub it off. Okay, coming back to your question, you must understand what is feeling, what is thought. Feeling means what? Feeling means what? If you read the blue book, you will understand. It's explained very clearly there. What do you mean by feel? When you feel, is there any thought? Is there any thought when you feel? No thought, is there? Feeling is what? Sensation, is there? So there is no thought involved, is there? But human beings' problem is, the moment you create this word feeling, thought arises. That is your problem. Yes or not? You can follow that. If you cannot follow, you tell me you cannot follow. Then I explain further. Cannot follow. You see, this word, feeling, is not feeling. Understand? It's a word. Understand? In Mandarin, what you call? 感觉. Understand? Then in Malay, what you call? Rasa. These are all words, understand? So the word points toward the thing, try to give meaning to that thing, but the word is not the thing, understand? The moment you create word, you create what they call concept. concept of what that feeling is. But to communicate, we need to use word. Can follow that? So do not be deceived by the word. All of your Dhamma cultivation, you arise your own problem because you use word, you use concept. You never use your true mind to understand. When you feel, what does it mean? Later on, you go back and read the blue book. Feel means what? Let's say you put your hand now on this granite floor. You feel. You feel. Without the word. Just feel with the true mind. Without the word. You can? What can you feel? The granite is cold, isn't it? Hot and cold. But that sensation before the word cold and hot come out, that is your mind. Understand? Huh? Can follow that? There is no word. Understand? Huh? You feel. I stand here, I can feel the chillness, the coldness. But that feeling is without words. Understand? Huh? So you want to know the difference between feeling and thought. Before you create that word, that is feeling. The moment you create that word, it's a thought. Can you follow that? That's why he finds it so difficult to differentiate between the two. He said, I think it's feeling. The moment you think, thought come out. Understand or not? There is thought. That's why he said, I think it's feeling. The thought definitely create thought, understand? How can thought be feeling? When you feel, there is no word. That's why the sensation, whether hot or cold, pleasant or unpleasant feeling or sensation, you can be aware of it, understand? But the moment you create words, it becomes a concept, an idea, it's not that thing. Can follow that? That's why meditation, you cannot do it thought-based. The moment you use word, it becomes thought-based. The moment you note, it becomes thought-based. And thought is never sati. Understand? Sati is before the knowing, awareness. That's why you have to differentiate and understand it clearly. That only you can cultivate. Otherwise, you use thought and cultivate thinking that that is sati, that is mindfulness. You cannot develop meditation that way. Because when the Buddha meant awareness, is awareness. When you stand aware, you don't go and think. You don't go and note. When you walk, aware. You don't go and note intending to walk. The Buddha never teach that way. Understand? So these two words, the question is very relevant. But the moment you understand, the question ceases to be relevant. Understand? Can you follow that? The question is relevant when you don't understand. But the moment you understand, the question ceases to be relevant. Understand? Louder a little bit. Thank you. Okay. A bit more. It's okay. I don't think the vibration can go. It's different from chanting. Can follow that? Can follow? So the question becomes very simple when you truly understand what is mind. The mind got two types. What is the first one? The first aspect is what? What are the two types of mind that you have? First one is what? Mundane or thinking mind? Mundane or thinking mind. The mind that you use a lot. And this one, the Buddha also called the conditioned arising mind. This mind think a lot. This is not your true mind. Understand not? That's why it's called the mundane mind or your thinking mind. Maybe we call it the first type. No need to use this word, first aspect, first type. First type of mind. Then second type is what? You can call it silent mind, but that is your true mind. Understand? Your true mind. Or what we normally term as the silent mind. Silent or meditative mind. This is the mind that you develop, train, and use to meditate. This one, the silent mind, the meditative mind, doesn't think. The moment it thinks, the moment it perceives, it becomes the mundane mind. That's why awareness is before the knowing. The moment you know, you perceive. The moment you know that feeling, the words, the concept come out. But when you really feel, there is no word. And feeling is very near the true mind. Even to become conscious. Like the Buddha said, in the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. It's only that consciousness. There is no one to see. You have not yet the aggregate of mind to come out to describe it or perceive it. Like this whole of seeing consciousness. When you see towards the Buddha Rupang in front here, before the word come out, the direct seeing, what do you see? You see things as they are without the words. Like a baby, without memory, without conditioning, without thought. That is what they see. The pure seeing. That's why the Buddha said, in the seeing, is only the seeing consciousness. You only become conscious. That is the pure seeing, pure consciousness. But because of your memory, your conditioning, you immediately label. Then you call it Buddha Rupang. Then you discriminate. Nice, not nice. Then feeling arises, pleasant, unpleasant. All these are mental conditioning. Born of dependent origination. Because you cannot understand dependent origination. That's why the Buddha teach dependent origination as the third right view. Dependent on certain thing. Certain corresponding thing arise. If you want to understand how your mind function, how you function as a human being, you need to silence your mind through the meditative mind. When you silent, you will understand how it creates through the conditioning, how upon contact what happened. Even though the teaching say upon contact feeling arise, you check whether it's really feeling alone that arise. Upon contact, many things happen. That's how your mind moves. It's just like what we have gone through, the physics experiment. The physics experiment. What happens when you switch on the switch? The moment the switch is switched on, this light bulb lights up. Understand? So this is how your mind actually functions. Quite similar. Upon contact, consciousness comes to be. That's why upon contact of eye with the external phenomena, you need condition. Color, shape, and form together with the light. Then upon contact with the eye as an organ and the consciousness, then it trigger off seeing consciousness. When seeing consciousness arise, it's like this light bulb. You become conscious of seeing. But there is no one to see as yet. But at the moment of consciousness, upon contact, conscious. But the trouble is within that consciousness, when it arises, the mind input is content. Without the content, consciousness is pure consciousness. But the moment you input content, there is where the mundane mind comes about. The content of consciousness. That's why upon contact, the seven universals, simultaneously they arise, the Buddha said. When there is contact, there is feeling, there is perception, they come together. There is one-pointedness, ekagata. Then there is also the life force. Then all this, the moment they arise, because of your conditioning, because of your views and your opinion, you immediately get conditioned into like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. That's why your consciousness become kusala and akusala, means wholesome and unwholesome. Then the evil roots are there. Unwholesome with what evil root? Greed, hatred, and delusion. So all this can be understood if you silence your mind and develop the understanding through your meditation. So it's a simple question. What the uncle asks is, how do you differentiate between what is feeling and what is thought? So now you understand. Those who came in late, did you hear the first part? Those who came in late didn't hear. Oh. So I have to repeat. So next time, check the program. Make sure you're punctual. Otherwise, listen to the recording after our retreat. One of our Kayanamita, she asked. He asked. He said, Ratio, how to differentiate between feeling and thought? Then he used the word, sometimes I think is feeling. That very sentence contradicts itself. Understand? When I think, how can you feel? Understand? The moment you think, you cannot feel. Your mind can only do one thing at a time. But when you feel, there is no thought. It's just pure sensation. No words. So that's why feeling and thought are totally different things. But it's important that he asks, because when you don't understand, the question becomes meaningful. But the moment I explain, just like what I told him before I answer, the moment you understand, the question becomes irrelevant. No more relevant. Now you can follow. This word feeling is a concept. It's an idea created by thought. English word, feeling. Mandarin word is what? 感觉 or 感受. Malay word is rasa. So different language use different words to describe. But words does not define what feeling is. So now you can understand the big difference between concept, words, and the true thing. When we say we feel, the example I give, you read from the blue book, you will understand. Because I take the trouble to answer and explain inside that session. But I realize people cannot understand what feeling is. At Sui An's house, during that sharing, I say, you feel, you put your hand on the, because Sui An's house also marble floor, very cooling. You feel, before the words, before the concept, you just feel, put your hand down and feel. I stand here, I can feel, because this granite floor is very cooling. So when you feel, before the words come out, what is that? It's just a mind state, isn't it? Sensation, without word, without label. But the problem with living being is, you think a lot. Everything also you want to translate into concept, words, and idea. Otherwise, you cannot understand. That's why I told you all, there are two types of mind. Mind, there are two types. The first type is the mundane mind or thinking mind, conditioned arising mind, the Buddha said. And this is your five aggregate or form of mind, mental aggregate. And the Buddha said, your mind, you can divide into four more aggregates. And how do you define those aggregates? The Buddha said it's very simple. You just reflect, contemplate. What can your mind do? What can your mind do? Huh? Okay. Apart from thinking, what else? Huh? Ah, you can feel that. So this is the first aggregate, feeling, Vedana. Feeling is just a sensation. No words, one, another. You're just silent. That's why when you meditate with a silent mind, it's totally different from thought-based meditation. Thought-based meditation, you use thought, you use word. You create a lot of labeling. You create a lot of words. That's why you cannot understand the true thing. And you create without understanding. Not to say you choose not to understand the word, because you never investigate. You never find out what people tell you. You become gullible. You just follow instruction. They say feel. Then feeling got three types. Pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling. Then you get con already. Then you keep on using word. Oh, pleasant feeling. Nice feeling. But when I feel, it's only hot and cold. But hot and cold is also a word, a concept. So you like cold floor, you say this is pleasant feeling, because like here no aircon, you feel cold, it's very good. But when you are in an aircon place, too cold, you want to put a mat underneath it. So these are words, concept, thought-based meditation. But the true meditation is the true mind, which is silent. And this is a meditative mind. That's why I say you need to train your mind to be silent. The moment you are silent, that is the meditative mind. And that mind can understand before the words, before the concept. So what is happening is, what can your mind do? Your mind can feel. Feeling is a very important aggregate. So this feeling aggregate in Pali is called Vedana. It is very near your true mind. The moment you feel, there is this pure consciousness of feeling. The mind tries to understand what it is. That's why it feels. And that is already the aggregate of mind. But it's still very near. Because the thought hasn't come in. The perception hasn't come in. The labeling, the word hasn't come in. This mind has not proliferated, has not started to think. The mundane mind has not really arisen. That's why at the moment of feeling is very important. If it's pure feeling, it's very important. Similarly for the other aggregates of mind. Apart from feeling, the mind can differentiate in a hot or cold. It can feel. That is the aggregate of mind. That's why that is the first aggregate. Because mind has that ability. Then what else can the mind do? It can perceive things, isn't it? So perception or sanya is the second aggregate of mind. So this is perception, the second aggregate. What else can the mind do? The third one is, you think a lot, isn't it? So this one, the Buddha called it sankara. Sankara or mental activity. Mental activity or mental states. Or mental volition. Mental intention or volition. Whatever that your mind can do. Activity means thinking. Thinking or movement within the mind. Like your planning, the scheming, your cunningness, deceitfulness, all this is mental activity. Then mental states are all the various experiences that you experience through the mind. Your mind state. Feeling is just hot and cold, pleasant, unpleasant. But when it comes to mental state, they got many, many states. Like when you are angry, it's a mental state. When you have envy, jealousy, it's a mental state. When you are calm, peaceful, it's a mental state. When there is tranquility, when there is stillness of mind. These are all mental states. When there is envy and jealousy, these are all mental states. So mental states, there are many within mind. Then you have your mental intention. In fact, Sankara covers everything that your mind can do, inclusive of feeling and perception. So this word is very important. That's why in the Buddha Dharma, in the teaching, the Buddha used this word a lot. Sabbe Sankara Anicchang. Sabbe Sankara Dukkhang. You heard of this, isn't it? What does it mean? Why did the Buddha say all of Sankara is impermanent? Anicchang. All of Sankara lead to suffering. Then the last one, he says Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. He never says Sabbe Sankara Anatta. Or he seldom says it. Because Anatta covers both. The condition arising and the unconditioned, they are both anatta. Whereas when it comes to impermanent and suffering state, it's only for the conditioned world. That's why it only involves sankhara. The unconditioned, which is included under Dhamma, because Dhamma is everything. The conditioned and the unconditioned is covered within all of Dhamma. What the Buddha taught is Dhamma. Dhamma means truth, nature's truth. Whatever that is within the mundane and the supramundane, they are Dhamma. So the third one is Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. That's why the third characteristics of nature, Anatta, non-self or empty nature, covers both the mundane and the supramundane. That's why he used a different word. If he use only Sankara, then that statement doesn't hold. Because the unconditioned is also anatta. So now you understand, in fact, all of mind, the Buddha later on, didn't even want to relate to feeling and perception. He just says Sankara. And this is what the content of consciousness is all about. This whole thing is the content of consciousness. Then the fourth aggregate is what? What else can your mind do? Apart from feeling, perceiving, thinking, mental states and all things, what else can it do? It can become what? Conscious of things, isn't it? Consciousness is, because it can become conscious of things. So consciousness is the fourth aggregate. Consciousness or vijnanam is the fourth aggregate. Because our physical body, we have five physical senses. Then there is a mind. Each and every of these senses is capable of consciousness, the Buddha said. We have this eye. Not the capital I. This one is the organ, eye. With the eye, upon contact with external phenomenal world and the mind or the consciousness, then you can become conscious of what you see. Similarly, with the ear, the hearing, you can be conscious of what you hear. Conscious of what you smell, taste, tactile, feel, and think. So mind has this ability to be conscious. That's why consciousness is the fourth aggregate. So when you relate through an investigative understanding, what can my mind do? then you will understand why the Buddha actually subdivide mind into four more aggregates. Yeah, this is what your mind can do. And all this, they pertain to the conditioned arising mind, the thinking mind, the mundane mind. The true mind has none of all this. That's why the true mind is just pure awareness. Pure awareness before the knowing. Before the knowing. After I define, you will be able to understand the difference between these two. Correct not? Now you can differentiate not. Huh? The true mind can feel. The true mind can be conditioned into thought consciousness, thinking, and its content. Whenever you arise a consciousness and you input the content, then these two become a thought. So what is thought? Thought is equals to consciousness plus its content. Understand that? And this one equals five aggregate of form and mind. And this is what your nama rupang is all about. Within the paticca samuppada. Can follow that? Yeah? So this is the five mental aggregates of form and mind. So now you understand what is thought. Whereas feeling is just the pure sensation before the word, before the knowing. So now it's very easy to differentiate, isn't it? So now the question becomes irrelevant. Yeah? So we can continue. Huh? Yeah. I hope you understand this, because this is very important. Otherwise, you meditate without understanding. You are using words, thought, concept. Thought-based meditation, you cannot develop the understanding. You cannot free your mind. You cannot develop sati. The true sati is awareness before the knowing. That's why all along, if you read this blue book, you will understand. You need to train your mind until it's silent, completely silent. And the silent mind is the true mind. They can meditate, they can understand a lot of things. They are all there. Yeah? So go back, pay attention. Yeah? In fact, all the transcripts, all the books that you receive, they are very, very important, very beautiful Dhamma inside there. If only you can understand. Those who have already diligently cultivated, they really, really appreciate. Because every time they read, is different again. Every time they listen to the recording, it's different again. As you progress, you will understand it differently. Because this Dhamma is spoken for all levels. Because from that understanding is spoken. So if you cannot develop the understanding, it's because you have not cultivated. Okay? Yeah. So now we continue. Huh? Anybody else? Who wants to report the meditation and ask questions? We have our uncle just now ask a very quick question. So now the rest should also make full use of this session. Anybody else? Nobody want to report meditation. Are you all meditating or are you all just walking around? Anybody wants to report their meditation and ask questions? If you don't ask, very difficult for there to be condition for Dhamma to flow. Or if you are not sure on how to develop the meditation, you better ask. Anybody? Wow, everybody just quiet, silent. There's nothing to be shy. Who is shy? The thought is shy, not you. When you think, then the thought creates all this delusion. What happens if you ask stupid question or wrong question? No question is stupid or wrong. Question is just question. Yes or no? If it's asked sincerely, then it can trigger a condition for Dhamma to flow. That's why do not allow your mind to create those wrong thoughts. They will condition you into all these things. In Hokkien, it's called Pai Se, Shai. These are all negative, deluded tendency or state of mind. If you are truthful and sincere, what is there to be shy? No question. No reporting. Ah, yes. Pass to PG. Yeah, pass the mic. Thank you. Yeah.
Brother Teo, there are many times when the prayer starts or when I pray, the feeling just arise in me and the tears will come. I don't know what it's trying to tell me. Sometimes it can be quite overwhelming. And I feel that I need to further my understanding of the Dhamma. But sometimes it's like, I don't know where to go. How do I get to there?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I think your question come about because of what you experienced recently, at some of the retreat and classes. You see, a lot of this thing, you have to develop your own understanding because it has a lot to do with your past cultivation. So when there is condition for all this to arise, you just silence your mind, then you will come to understand. Like you mentioned just now, every time you do your prayer or your chanting, because these are something that you do to develop faith, understand? When you develop chanting, or develop what they call even the puja, your puja chanting, or they call it prayer. When there is faith, it will connect. Then when you have some of these past cultivation that are related to those chanting or those prayer, then sometimes tears will just flow. Or you are at certain places where there is affinity with you. That's why all our spiritual trip, many of them felt that tears just flow. And there are some unstoppable. Keep on flowing. But these are not tears of sorrow or sadness or lamentation. These are tears that they cannot understand. Because I have even seen people, I think he is here, in the Thursday class, I think Kwan San. As I explained the Dhamma to somebody else, as he listened, tears keep on flowing. Then he was like crying. Then I just ask, do you know what is happening? Why are you like that? The next instant, next moment, he can laugh. he can just laugh, no, but he doesn't know why it's like that. No. It because a lot to do with the past. Because the past, these are the Dhamma he has heard before. And in the past, he has missed those windows. That's why this life, the nature inside, no, these are the things he has been looking for. And he has lost it long time ago. That's why it cry inside. But the thinking mind, the mundane mind, which is only carrying the memory of this life, this segmented life, can never understand. That's why I told him, you don't worry, it's from your past. So for you, it's the same, BJ. Then sometimes the emotion may move you and the mudra can come out because there is some conditioning from the past. But when this mudra or whatever, when it's about to move, you have to be aware. Because sometimes it's because of some of these non-humans that have affinity with you or whatever, they make use of your this physical body to manifest them. Suddenly there's a very deep silence. And you hear the chanting or not? Why not we meditate for a while? We radiate love and metta. Silence your mind. Okay. Okay, you can slowly come out meditation. So just now was good. Suddenly, the stillness come and the energy came very strong. So for those who can feel, you will know. Then I don't know why the chanting start. No, it's not that type of chanting. It's a Buddhist chanting. It's a Buddhist hymn. It's a Buddhist hymn. Yeah, Burmese, Burmese. It's their chant. And before it start, I think suddenly the stillness came. No. No, the concrete thing there, when they switch off something, then you feel that it's more quiet. But actually, the whole vibration quiet down, but there were echo earlier on, echo. Then suddenly it become like still. But this shift in consciousness, they can happen. They can happen. More important is your mind is sensitive, understand not? That's why when you're sensitive, there is no word on. You will perceive them without words. Just now, the four aggregates of mind, I miss out this point. You see, every time you perceive, may be feeling, may be a perception of external phenomena, whether physical, mental or nature's phenomena. You can be at the moment of perception, no problem. Moment of feeling, no problem. As long as your mind does not proliferate, not drawn away, not lost in thought, doesn't become heedless, then it's okay. Then it is the investigative mind, meditative mind. Because from that silent, it can aware of perception, aware of feeling, aware of the aggregates of mind, like I used to explain earlier on. You can be at the moment of feeling very sensitive, because that mind that is trained does not behave like a mundane mind or a heedless mind anymore. At the moment of sense experience, you can be at the moment of contact, it stops there. Then you can see what happened upon contact. Then it can be at the moment of feeling, it can just stay there and feel without words. Feel. Then perception, it can be at the moment it perceives and it does not create. You can see the conditioning doesn't come in before it comes in. Then at the moment of consciousness, the pure seeing, the pure consciousness, before the content go in. Or even after the content go in, it does not create problem. And that is the true mind, that is the meditative mind. The mind that is already trained. The mind that is already heedful. That's why it's collected, unwavering. It does not stir. It does not behave like normal mundane mind anymore. It doesn't think like a normal living being, a putujana. Thinking cannot arise. Because in that moment of sati and samadhi, there is no thought. That samadhi will ensure there is no stirring of mind. The mind is collected and unwavering. Unwavering means no movement. And that is what the trained mind and meditative mind is all about. So when your mind is really stable, trained, heedful, it can be at the moment of contact, moment of feeling, moment of perception, moment of activity of mind, moment of consciousness. The mind that is in sti can see all this, can be with those moments. And very clear, very clear. That's why you can be at the moment of sense experience. And you can experience all of the phenomena within this world, may it be physical, mental, all nature's phenomena. And all of their beauty, pristine beauty and wonders of life, of existence, that is arising within the moment. You can just silence your mind without thought, to just be with it, experience it, live it, and it's so beautiful. That is what meditation is all about. Oh, that chipping of the bird very loud. Here there is a lot of this vibration around. So regarding your question, PJ, so now you understand, just now I explained, you have to silence and feel and find out. It has a lot to do with your past. Then when it starts to condition you into movement or mudra or what, you must silence and find out what is it. Either people are using your body or what, you will know for a good cause or whatever, you will know. But sometimes if you are not careful, you can be conditioned into movement. Because some of you, Kayanipita, when you see other people having mudra, you thought, oh, it's interesting to have. Then when it comes, then you think that is it. So the thought goes in. Then the thought also want to move. And then it moves. Then non-human can actually make use of you. But if it comes through condition, it's different. It's different. And it manifests different. Then sometimes when you have the faith, when you have the Dhamma, if it's your way of cultivation and practice and your affinity with that great being, then that great being's nature can manifest inside. Like what happened at the Cameron Highland Retreat. You remember? The day before, actually at that day when Joyce and a few of them about to leave, that Om Te Mi Me Mi Hom, suddenly that nature went in. Then, actually before that, she already got this uneasy feeling that she has to do something. Then my nature sensed it. But like I said, I cannot read my, I don't know what is it. But I knew there is something she must do. So at that, I think lunch, she was looking at me, you know. Then she asked me, you know, Matthew, is there something you want to tell me? I just laugh. I say, I don't know, but I know you have to do something. Then after that, went out into the room up there. Again, when I passed by, there was condition because they didn't lock the door. Then somebody was sweeping inside. Then again, she was so uneasy there. Then I saw, again, I knew there's something she must do. Then I looked at her again. Then she asked me the same question. Brother, you got something to tell me there? I said, I got nothing to tell you. I know you got something to do. He said, you just tell me, lah, solve my problems. Then later on, I told her, I don't know. I know I will have told you. Then you know what she said? She said, okay, lah, I will do. But don't laugh. Don't laugh. Because she knew that that thing inside that want her to do that thing is something that people who don't understand, they think she up here got mental problem or something wrong. I say, you don't worry, you just do meant to be. Oh, that day when it manifests, it was so powerful, so powerful. And many felt, and a lot of you all benefited because that was Kuan Yin's nature, so beautiful, so powerful. And many of them knew the first two chan was not her, something else inside her. And it was so powerful. Then a few mudra came. Then I saw they radiated. Then there was this bolt of energy so strong. So I also rejoined. Then I also radiated. Then it became very, very strong. That day, a lot of Kayanamita benefited. And during that time, many of your heart actually opened. You don't know. Later on, you will know. That's why it has a very great impact. Then when you come here, you must radiate more love, more metta. You must wish all beings within this vicinity well-being and happiness. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy. may all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, all to be well and happy, always. May they too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be always pure and beautiful, be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. May all beings be well, happy and peaceful always. We rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so that answer your question. Anybody else? Yes, pass to Susan the mic. Thanks. Yes.
Since I came back from the Cameron's retreat.
Oh, yeah, a lot of things happened. Sadhu.
I've been very happy.
Yeah, definitely.
Even going about things that had to be done.
Yes.
Over the past 1-2 weeks. It was with a very happy mind, very willing.
Yeah, a lot of joy. You do not only with joy, with understanding. And everything is like pointing towards the right direction. The causes and conditions, everything like fall into place. Because of your past parami and you are very sincere. And when the time comes, when you connect, you move very fast. You move very fast. Because that understanding, that connection from the past is very important. You have been cultivating very well, but you only need certain important pointers to actually move into it, so that you can penetrate much deeper than what you have cultivated before from your past. Then this life, because of your faith, your affinity with the Triple Gem, your sincerity and your condition, you have the means. You can actually progress very fast. You can develop a lot of wholesomeness. I really rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, you can continue.
Brother Teo, I'm now having that that joy and that stillness now.
Yes.
So how do I move from
here? Oh, very easy. You're just silent. That silence will tell you everything, will let you understand everything. Don't try to know. The thought that try to know cannot know. You just silent and rejoice. Everything will unfold. The Dhamma will unfold. It's the true silent that understand, not the thought, not the words. When there is silent, you have to trust that nature. That's why now you have to do the third support. Sorry, the fourth support. Do you remember what are the four support for meditation? Awareness-based meditation, I'm not talking about thought-based meditation. What are the four support? Four support. Four. Awareness-based meditation. First one is what? Relax is key. Relax means no tension, no stress, no fear, no worry, no anxiety, at ease. Understand? Just relax. No mental state, no question, no doubt. Just relax, silent, confident. Yeah. Second one is what? Aware. Because I don't want to use the word mindful. Buddhists, they understand mindfulness differently. When they know, they use thought, they say mindful. Like they not eating, they say mindful of eating. Sati is not like that, awareness is not like that. Just aware before the word, before the labeling. That's why when you use the word feeling, asana, that's why you cannot differentiate between what is thought and what is feeling. Your problem is what? You don't know how to feel. Asana. You straight away create the word. You straight away hot and cold. And ask you to feel, you never feel. Say, brother, your floor is very cold. And that is not feeling. That is the perception of it. That is the word that you create. The real feeling is just the sensation. No labeling yet. Understand? That tactile consciousness, that clear sensation within, before the words. That's why you have to maintain awareness. Aware means silent. Understand? So, relax, aware. Then after that, the third one is what? 24 hours means what? Sustain awareness. You have to sustain that awareness, that mindfulness, that silence within for as long as you can. That's why don't try to know. When you meditate, don't try to know. The knowing all comes from the thought. When you awaken, then you understand it's different. When the silent mind insight into phenomena or awaken to the Dhamma or phenomena, then the understanding comes. It's without word. It awakens, it insight into it, it understands, and then the word comes. It's different from using the word and the concept to look for it and thinking that that is the Dhamma that you have awakened. No. That's why it's the silent mind, it's sati, mindfulness, without thought. So this 24 hours is the sustenance of it, continuing, the continuity of that silent, that meditative mind. You just make sure that this awareness is continuous. Continuous means it can be at the moment of contact, at the moment of feeling, perception, but it does not get drawn away. It does not get proliferated. Means you are not lost in thought. Means the condition arising mind, the thinking mind, doesn't become active and heedless. If you are actively thinking, what happens? You are lost in thought. When you are lost in thought, you are preoccupied with that thinking, that emotion, that stirring of the mind, that chattering, that dialogue inside, understand? Then how can you be aware? When you are lost in thought, preoccupied with that thinking, that feeling, that emotion, that stirring of the mind, that conditioning, you can never be aware. That's why meditation is to maintain this awareness, to be aware of the reality, the moment. But because you have a mind, you have to live in this world. That's why you have to perceive, like when you drive, you have to be aware of traffic, everything. But you are not lost in thought, asana. If you are lost in thought, especially when you wait at traffic light, then you start to think or play with your handphone, what happened? Green light also, you don't know, people will horn you on the back, asana. Or somebody sitting next to you, hey, green already, you know. That's why you cannot, like, want to multitask, understand? Because mind is mind. It can only do one thing at a time. So, for your case, you have to do the last support. The last support is trust. Trust means you trust your nature. Trust your nature. And the meaning is very deep. Trance means your nature to the meditation without you interfering. You know what is without you interfering? Without the meditator inside there. You understand, huh? Who is the meditator? For mundane people, it's the thought, understand not? Because the thought say, I meditate. So when you identify with this as the I meditate, then there is a person inside there who meditate. And who is that person? It's the thought that create idea and concept of meditation, understand not? I must note this. I must note that. I must do this. I must do that. And who is doing? Thought is doing. Thought is actively doing. When thought is active, you can never be aware. Understand? Wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. Because the true meditation is silent. When you are silent, you are with the true mind. When you are silent, your mind is attentive without thought. That's why it can see things as they are. It can understand what is going on. It can just awaken. That is the true meditation. That's why walking the path of Dhamma, cultivating Noble Eightfold Path with the silent mind, with the heedful mind. And that was the question that Padmasuri wanted to ask me to share, when there is condition. So remind me to do that. I did some sharing at the Thursday class, which was very good. The recording for the Thursday class just 2 days ago was very, very good. You all should listen to it. It actually explained very clearly about the whole cultivation, the whole of Dhamma cultivation, the three phases of Dhamma, and how you progress into it, and how you develop the silent mind to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Yeah. They are very clearly described. So you can use that to complement. So the four support for awareness-based meditation, always remember, the first one is relax. Relax means no stress, no doubt, no tension, no wrong view. Just relax, at ease. Silent. So the moment you are relaxed, body and mind, there is no tension, no stress, nothing. You are at ease. Natural state of mind. Then you develop awareness within to understand what is going on. But people who has not trained their mind cannot do this meditation. That's why they have to start with thought-based meditation. That's why they need method and technique to anchor the mind. Because their mind think a lot, heedless. Totally lost in thought. They can't even maintain mindfulness for a split second. That's why when you ask them to do anapanasati, split second, the awareness is gone. They are lost in thought. They cannot do anything. That's why their training is, the Buddha said, every time it wanders off, bring it back. Until this anapanasati becomes stable. Until you can be mindful of the in and out breath. And that is to train your mind to be aware of something. The moment you anchor it to that object of meditation, it will not wander off, anasana. That it will stay there. That's why all of technique and method you use, or people teach you how to use, you must understand. They only serve an initial skillful means to train the mind, to anchor the mind, so that this mind can be trained to be aware of this object of meditation. Then after that, don't be gullible. Don't continue to do, understand not? It's just like the Zen analogy, you remember? Tying the dog to the pole. Because there was this stray dog in one of the Zen monasteries in Japan. So every time when they have this meditative session going on, this stray dog run around, bark, and do all those things. So the abbot had a very good solution. He told the attendant, he said, okay, tie this dog up and tie it up somewhere further away. So they tie this dog up. So it become more quiet. Then they have been doing this for many years. Until one day, the abbot passed away. Then they continued to do the new abbot. Then what happened was one day, that dog, too old already, also passed away. Then after the dog passed away, the attendant came and asked the new abbot, what must we do? You know what they do or not? What do they do? They go and get another dog. And they go and tie it up. Why? Because master says so, is it? The old abbot says so. This is a tradition. This is a practice. That's why they do. They fail to understand the reason why they tie it. Understand not? So when you meditate without understanding, you are exactly doing what they do. Understand not? But they tell you to note what? Rising, falling. And the Buddha said, note anapanasati. He never said note, no. He said, develop mindfulness or in and out breath, but you go and translate as note, no. Then, the Buddha always say, meditate on anapanasati, and it's good for you. So you every time think that when you do anapanasati, you are meditating. You become gullible, like they tie the dog. Every time you note rising, falling, you think you do vipassana. That's what has become, oh, nowadays, vipassana and meditation, for those who don't understand. So if you do all those without understanding, then you are being gullible. You are doing the same thing. You tie that dog because previous efforts say tie the dog. Then you go and quote the Buddha. Buddha say do anapanasati. That's why every time you develop mindfulness or in and out breath, you think you are meditating. You are following the advice of the Buddha. But you never check the sutta. Anapanasati is just the first of the six categories of cultivation within kaya nupassana. And the purpose is to train your mind to be mindful, to be heedful. Then only you can move. Then after that, what did the Buddha teach? You have to move on to mindfulness of? Mindfulness of what? The four posture. Then, sati sampajana, the third category of practice, is the in-between activity of all the four posture. Mindfulness of all action, all movement within the present moment in daily mindfulness. But that one is the most important. And you don't understand the teaching. So you thought mindfulness or in and out breath, every time you do that, Buddha, 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 you are meditating. That is just the initial training to be mindful, to stabilize it, to be heedful, to anchor it. So all those rising, falling method technique is just an initial skillful means to train the mind. After the mind is trained, don't do anything. Just silent. All the training of the mind is to lead you back to the silent mind, to the true mind, so that you can understand clearly who are you, what are you, how from the true mind, the conditioned arising mind come out, the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the stirring mind. And this is how it come out. And this is how you will develop a lot of wisdom. That's why from the silent, everything arises. That is the reason why the Buddha mentioned, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So we choose to take care of mind. We choose to be heedful. So that this mind can be understood clearly. Okay? Yeah. So remember, trust means you trust your nature to do. The thought don't interfere. Because every time thought interfere is thought-based meditation. And thought cannot understand the truth. Because what you are trying to develop is the Dhamma. And you have already chanted under salutation to the Dhamma. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo. Then what is this Dhammo? The Buddha said, well expounded is the Dhamma by the Buddha. And the Buddha explained clearly what is this Dhamma. This Dhamma is sanditiko, akaliko, ehipaseko, opanaiko. Then he said, this Dhamma is also pachetang, veditatbo, venohiti. And then you have to check if the so-called meditation that you are doing does not lead you to all this type of Dhamma, then it's not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So first of all, you check. The first characteristics of Dhamma is sanditiko. What is sanditiko? Yeah? The Dhamma is analytical, means what? Can be realized in the here and the now, before you die. Okay? So that is the first one. So if what you are meditating cannot lead to that type of analytical Dhamma, then it's not the teaching of the Buddha. It's not the meditation as taught by him. Then after analytical is what? Akaliko. And this is where thought-based meditation will fail. Akaliko means what? The Dhamma is timeless, beyond thought, beyond the thinking mind. If you use thought as an instrument, which is lower than the unconditioned Dhamma, which is beyond thought, you can never penetrate. Asana. Because this Dhamma is akaliko, beyond thought, beyond time, the timeless. How can you use thought, which is an instrument that is below? You will never be able to realize the Dhamma or the enlightenment that is beyond thought. So thought-based meditation will fail. That's why it's akaliko. Then this Dhamma is ahipasiko. You can investigate into it. It welcomes cultivator to investigate into it. And because it is the truth, it will stand up to investigation. There is no problem. That's why this Dhamma is sanditiko, akaliko, ahipasiko. Then openaiko means leading inward into the heart, into the nature. That's why you must trust that nature when you do your meditation. Then this Dhamma is pachetang, can be realized by the wise each for themselves. Veditatbo, we know it. When you can confirm that all of these are what you have realized through your cultivation, then this is the right Dhamma. This is the right enlightenment. That's why when you trust that nature means what? That nature meditates on its own without the interference of thought, without the mundane mind, the thinking mind coming to tell you, oh, this is anicchang, this is dukkang, this is anatta. All these are thought-based knowledge, not the real Dhamma. The real Dhamma got nowhere. It will awaken and understand by itself. Then when it awakens, there is no word, because it is the timeless Dhamma. Then that form and mind that is connected to that nature, that silent mind, that trust, will go through cessation, Nibbana. That's why when that nature meditates on its own, it will reach a state of silence that is beyond thought, beyond mind, Nibbana. Cessation of form and mind will arise when wisdom is there. When that mind truly understands, awakened to no more delusion, it cannot be deluded, it cannot be deceived, then it can cease, no problem. Because there is no more ignorance, no more craving, no more delusion. So such Dhamma can arise. So that is what the cultivation is all about. Okay? So from that silence, because you have the condition, that joy lead to that silence. And you know how it come about. These are factors of enlightenment. Maybe I share this too. So the factors of enlightenment come this way. This got a lot to do with her past too. You see, the first factor of enlightenment is what? Sati, mindfulness. That's why this is the silent mind, okay? That's why you have to cultivate until the silent mind is there. Then without sati, you cannot be heedful. When you are in sati, you can be heedful. Heedfulness means what? Ever mindful. Ever mindful. To cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, to awaken. Then after that, you can investigate into the Dhamma, investigation of Dhamma. So this is Dhamma Vichaya. So this is the second factor of enlightenment. Then third one is what? Third one is what? Virya. Virya is what? Spiritual zeal. What happens is, after you investigate into the Dhamma that the Buddha has taught, it stand up to investigation. Like we mentioned just now, ahi pasiko, you investigate. Yeah, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, 183, 21, 22, 23, they are all so clear, so beautiful. And they stand up to investigation. The law of karma, they stand up to investigation. Dependent origination, vulnerable truth, all stand up to investigation. So your faith become very strong. And when your faith become very strong, it will drive you to cultivate karma. And that's what virya is all about. So when it has this ability to investigate into Dhamma, your faith becomes unshakable. Unshakable. Then virya, which is the third enlightenment factor, will arise. This virya, when it's there, it will drive you to cultivate more diligently. Understand? Not? You become more determined because you realize this is the Buddha Dhamma. It stand up to investigation. It's so beautiful. It really leads to enlightenment. It can solve all of your suffering, worldly problems. So because of that, this will be the spiritual zeal that will drive you to cultivate. Then as you cultivate, what happens? Your mindfulness becomes more and more stable, more and more clear. Then when your mindfulness becomes more and more stable, more and more clear, your mind state becomes very quiet, very tranquil, very peaceful. That's how piti arises. Piti is the fourth enlightenment factor. A type of spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, they will arise. And when they arise, if you continue to relax, and let it be, it will become more and more fine, more and more peaceful. Then piti will transform into sukha, spiritual bliss. But sukha is not an enlightenment factor, so you must not get caught because it's very blissful. You must allow it to pass. Then it will reach a state of paucity. Paucity is what the silent mind is all about. Or tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. Or stillness of mind. Then this paucity, when it arises, that's why you must develop this fourth support, trust. Don't try to know, just silent, let it be. Then it will stabilize until very, very quiet. Then it becomes samadhi, the sixth enlightenment factor. Then when this samadhi arises, the mind becomes unwavering, collected. That's why I say at the moment of sense experience, it doesn't move anymore. That's why it can be at the moment of perception, moment of feeling, moment of contact, moment of activity of mind, sankhara, moment of consciousness. It can just stay there. That mind is a very different mind. Then when there is samadhi established because of that stable sati, it can see things as they are. That's how wisdom arises. When wisdom arises, the mind is liberated, no longer deluded. When it's no longer deluded, it develops the last enlightenment factor, which is upeka. What is upeka? Equanimity of mind. This one is the equanimous mind born of wisdom. How to spell equanimous? Equa? Huh? Equanimity, yeah? Equanimity, equanimity of mind. This is the equanimity of mind born of wisdom. Not born of concentration or samadhi or conditioned state. Because of the panya, it becomes wise. It no longer creates duality of like and dislike, pleasant and pleasant. There is no more right and wrong. Because they see things as they are. They will come to realize right and wrong is just a convention. Because when you say right, you never say right according to who? Understand? Right according to you may not be different as right according to him or another person. So right and wrong is not a reality, it's a conventional reality. Means it is relative, it's not absolute. All our duality is within the conditioned world. That's why when you have this enlightenment factor, equanimity, born of wisdom, it can see things as they are and accept things as they are. He can accept everything as the way it is, whether it's human being, situation or condition. The world is the world. People are just the way they are. That's why there is no right, no wrong. When you accept them for what they are, you become beautiful. You will not react or blame or say anything anymore. You just smile because you understand. They are just the way they are. Doesn't mean you agree with what they do and what they say. Because like I always share with you all, that is the final penetrative understanding that I developed after I understood all this. Deluded people will say deluded things. Angry people will say angry things. Selfish people will do selfish things. So they are just the way they are, no right, no wrong. So you don't go and blame them. Don't go and react to what they say. Don't go and challenge them or fight them. And when the world is in such condition, it will be like that. Don't try to be a hero. When there is no condition for things to manifest, just let things be. Everything is just condition arising. That's why when I started this retreat, I already told you, without understanding condition, you cannot develop wisdom. The real wisdom comes from understanding true wisdom. Come from understanding condition. When you understand the condition behind all things, you have great wisdom. That's why the Buddha always used this word. Whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And if you can understand the causes and conditions, you have great wisdom. Then you will understand why the world is this way. You will understand who you are, what you are. And you will know how to go about liberating your mind, not to be entangled by all these things. Okay. Does that? Yes, can.
Relative, can I just?
Can continue, no problem. Yeah.
At that point in time, can we choose? Can there be a choice? Not to react.
Okay, very good question. You see, what is choice? You must be careful. Because if you understand clearly, Krishnamurti always use this word. Wherever there is choice, there is confusion. Understand? I better write down. This one I seldom mention, but I did mention before. I don't know how many of you got it. Maybe I write in English, I write in red. Wherever there is choice, there is what? There is confusion. You know why or not? Why must you choose? Why must you choose? Because you have a preference, understand? Or you have a view, understand? Of right and wrong, good and bad. So wherever there is choice, there is confusion. But it doesn't mean that you cannot decide in life, understand? Making a decision based on right understanding or wisdom is not a choice, understand? It's basing on understanding that I decide to act this way, understand? I didn't make a choice, understand? That's why acting according to thought is not acting at all. So these two are linked. Can you follow that? Now I use blue. Acting according to memory. Is not acting at all. These are very profound sayings, and Krishnamurti liked to express it this way because he saw it. That's why during the early years, 20 years ago, when I read his book or heard some of his talk, I was full of joy. Because for the first time in the world, there is somebody who can understand all this and put it into words. So this understanding is very difficult to come by. Why do we say acting according to memory is not acting at all? Memory means what? All of your past experiences, understand? Your accumulation of past experiences. And what are those things that you accumulate in your brain, in your memory? The scars of memory, your like and dislike, all the things that you have gone through, all your phobia, all your happy moment, understand? And what does memory bring about? Attachment. Attachment to all the experiences. When you act according to memory, you are not acting at all. This is based on delusion, craving. All of memory is what? You only store those that you like. Understand not? Or that can make you feel good. But the other opposite, which is the phobia, all of your, what they call, suffering, very severe life situation that you experience, like your scars of memory, that one you don't want to store now. But you cannot do anything because it actually accumulates into your brain. The way it accumulates is because it comes out through fear, understand? Your intense fear and phobia. And that actually went in the unconscious. And that is severe attachment there, understand? Because of the fear, that's why you constantly dream of the same phobia, the same fear. Then within memory, you also have seen how you cheat people and how other people cheat you, understand not? Then when you act according to all this memory, what happened? You are acting out of fear, out of worry, out of anxiety, out of selfishness. That's why you don't act according to Dhamma understanding. You don't act according to Noble Eightfold Path. You just act because memory tell you, hey, this guy last night cheat me. Understand not? Then you have an idea. This guy is out for no good. So memory is all of your accumulated past. Before you are enlightened, All this accumulated memory is delusion. Understand? No? Your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your attachment, your craving, your lust, your whatever, they are all there. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. Where you act out of those fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, lust, craving. And this is not the way to act. The way to act is to develop wisdom and understanding. Understand? No? Can follow that? When there is wisdom and understanding, then I act. I don't make choice anymore, understand? I know this lead to downfall. That's why I choose to keep the precept. That's why I will be very serious about life. I will undertake the training rule not to violate all those precepts, because I develop understanding or right view with regards to law of karma. Then this is the way I act. I act with understanding. Understand? I don't make a choice. Understand? That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. Then wherever there is choice, there is confusion. Because when I understand, I act. I don't make choice. Understand? When condition is no more there, I cannot say, hey, I decide already, you know. Or I promise already, you know. You can promise, you can decide. But the moment you see that there is no more condition, then you don't act anymore, understand not? That's why I was never rigid in my approach. Sometimes we have program, but we cannot follow program because condition is different, understand not? Then like just now, suddenly still. Then suddenly something happened. If I become rigid, 100% must follow, just like what the rules say, traffic light, green light, go. Red light, stop. But you don't want to find out the purpose behind traffic light. What is the purpose behind traffic light? To regulate traffic flow, isn't it? So when the traffic light is out of order, red light, you very, very law-abiding. You say, Buddha say, you know, red light cannot go. No, like that precept, you know, I cannot kill, you know, or I cannot what, you know. Buddha say, you know, you quote someone. You know. So, you stop there. Don't want to move. Then you see what happened. Because the traffic light is no longer serving its purpose and function. It's out of order now. It's always red light. People who are rigid, they behave like that. Law abiding. The law say red light cannot go. Buddha say cannot. Actually, Buddha never say. He quote Buddha and put words into Buddha's mouth. Buddha did mention such thing under certain circumstances, understand? That's why he said, I undertake the training rule to abstain. He never say, thou shalt not. Understand? These are two different things. Thou shalt not means you must not kill. But when he say, I undertake the training rule to abstain, means what? He know. Under certain conditions, you can decide to do. But you act with understanding. Understand? Like when you decide to sacrifice. Just like those soldiers or police, understand? If you meet with somebody who is got problem up here, suddenly they go killing, shooting. Like in US, it happened very often. Then sometimes it's even here in KL, I think one of these army people, they go and shoot. Then you are a police, or you are part of the government authority that are responsible for the security and safety of the people. What must you do? You know, it's violating your precept to kill. But you kill with understanding, with a noble intention, to save the rest, to save the many. You're willing to take the karma. Doesn't mean there is no karma. But the karma is so much more different than the killing that is intended with evil root behind. Understand? When there is hatred, when there is anger, when there is delusion, then you kill. The karma is very heavy. But when you kill out of love and compassion to protect the many, with understanding, you don't have anger and hatred. You just do your duty. That's why the Buddha later on explained about the executioner, you remember? He killed a lot of people in there. He's an executioner, remember? Not Angulimala alone. Angulimala is because he was a robber at that time. not really a robber, wrong view, the master teach him the wrong thing. But there was a retired executioner, remember? When he heard Sariputta explaining about the law of karma and honesty, he suddenly cried. You know. Then he became very sad, full of lamentation. He said, I kill so many. Then Sariputta asked, who do you kill? Why do you kill? I'm an executioner. Then he said, when you kill, do you have hatred, anger, or unhappiness towards them? He said, no, I pity them. He said, but he has that duty where he chooses that livelihood, understand? And he has to execute. So Sariputta told him, he said, this is not serious, understand? But you don't have anger, hatred, and delusion. It's your duty. You have a career that needs you to do. And when you do it, you pity them, actually. You have a lot of goodness in you. So, precepts are meant to serve a purpose. When it doesn't serve the purpose, do not be rigid, like the traffic light. Oh, very, very rigid. That's why I say wisdom is not rigid. So, wisdom is something that you develop through understanding. It's not a knowledge. It's not rigid. It is not static. It's not every time this type of situation you must act like that. No such thing. Understand? And then that becomes rigid, a rule, knowledge. But wisdom, there is no rule. Understand? No choice. Based on understanding, you flow, accord, and you will know how to act. Because through that understanding, you are incapable of evil, you will know how to act. You will know how to move. You don't make choice. But you can use word. You still choose, Brother Theo. Correct? I choose is because you use that word choose. Understand? I act, I never choose. Understand? And I don't act according to memory. I act according to memory is knowledge. Understand? You remember, you memorize like a formula. Then 1 + 1 = 2. Otherwise, you argue. When you act according to wisdom, Dhamma, Noble Eightfold Path, then there is pure action. Then there is no confusion. There is no delusion. So that's why the final understanding is you don't make choice. But don't get that word wrong, because English word you know. How can you live in the world without making a choice? Sometimes you got a dilemma. I must choose now. Oh, go or don't go? Go, my spouse not happy. Don't go, I not happy. Then how? You have to make a choice. But if you have wisdom, you will not choose that way. Understand? You will ask yourself, based on the condition now, what is the best action? If I go, it's because of selfishness or what? Craving or not? If I don't go, is it because I'm scared of my spouse? You have to understand. If it's for the good of the many, if there is condition, it doesn't harm or create any misunderstanding, then you act. Understand? You need to communicate, discuss, and let them understand, then you do that. Because the condition will manifest. All of Dhamma is like that. That's why you cannot understand condition arising. You cannot understand the teaching. And without that understanding of condition, you cannot develop wisdom. Sadhu. Very good question. Okay, any more question? What's the time now? Oh, 5 more minutes left. Okay, after that you can have your meditation. Maybe I will just make full use of this few minutes to summarize to those who are new. If you want to understand the whole meditation, you really have to read this book. This book is very important. Then you got any question, you can ask. Then for those who are more serious into meditation, this book, Samatha Vipassana Bhavana, which is based on the Klang talk that I delivered at MBC Center last year, April 24th. This one will help you so that you will not go wrong, so that you will understand clearly what Samatha is, what Vipassana is. And all of the meditative understanding, they are all described here. Then there's another book. If you want to understand life, you can read this one. This is based on the seminar in Bangkok that I delivered under the World Buddhist Conference in the year 2013, August. So this one explains clearly to you the nature's law that governs life and existence, and how the Buddha Dhamma, as taught by the Buddha, can allow you to have that understanding. The title is International Seminar on Life Management with Meditation, Experience and Success. So I changed the topic to Success in Life via Meditation Following the Dhamma Way. So this is a very good seminar paper and talk. You read through, you will develop a lot of clear understanding of life, and you will know how to actually go about cultivating and living life. So these books are available for free distribution if you want them. There are only three copies left. If you need more, you can collect it at either my house or Sui An's house. Or I think Padma Suri also may have some. Okay? So with that, maybe you all can start your meditation. So 2:30 to 4 o'clock, you have 1.5 hour. Formal sitting, walking or lying down meditation, followed by daily mindfulness training. You are bowing, Dhamma contemplation, reflection and inquiry within the vicinity of Sumeru area, while in the walking, standing, sitting and lying down posture. For those who are new, since you got 1.5 hour, if you find that it's too long, maybe you can walk around mindfully to visit those areas. If you haven't come to this place, you should at least visit the stupa at the back. The stupa at the back is very nice. Then, next to the stupa, there is a shrine, Maitreya Buddha. That one is Maitreya Buddha. Then overlooking down towards this end is King Saka. You can walk around. Then there are some caves, the Kuan Yin Pond. There is this Lord Shiva next to the cave. So I leave it to you all. So we meet here again at 5:30. Oh, sorry, 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock, we will have another Q&A. Then maybe we will go through the Heart Sutta not a bit to develop the proper understanding of the Dhamma and meditation as taught by the Buddha. Then you can write down your question if you have. Can ask any question regarding meditation, Dhamma, and real-life application of the Dhamma. Then 5:30 to 6:30, you can have your rest. You got 1 more hour. Then 6:30, you come back for meditation here until 7:15. Then we have our evening chanting. Then after that, you will have your at 7:45 chanting with Brother Lim Mahasatipatthana Sutta. Yes. Yeah, how many of you don't have the Heart Sutta note? You collect them? Oh, tonight? Cannot. He's sore throat. That's how say. You can collect them. You can collect them. Those who don't have the Heart Sutta short notes, you can collect them. Those who don't have, you can collect your Heart Sutta short notebooks. Then this one, samatha vipassana, you can also collect, if you want. You collect. No, this one, another one. Can. You can take. Okay, you can start your meditation, You can do formal, or bowing, or lying down, or walking, or reflection, up to you. If you are not sure, you take the blue book and read, then you meditate. Okay, you can pay respect to Lord Buddha, then after that, you can do your meditation.